Thank you all for being here. Appreciate it. Some of you have missed Room 110, haven't you? Been a while. I'm standing here with two gentlemen that I've spent a whole lot of time with, along with members of their respective leadership teams. As for months and months, we have been hashing out in great detail how we're going to deliver on the promise of saving the pension system. Everybody wants it to be done. Everybody knows it needs to be done. It's easy to talk about doing it. It's harder to actually come up with a document and a bill that will allow it to happen. And yet, through a tremendous amount of time and a lot of conversation with a lot of outside groups, some of whom I believe are here in the room. I'm not sure exactly which are here, but I know some of the groups that we've met with are here. We have exhaustively gone through everything we can to ensure that we do, in fact, deliver on the promise. And it's keeping the promise is really the crux of what we are doing here today. So in a moment, we're going to take you through 10 highlights of what this bill is and what it isn't. After that, we're going to, as you all leave, give you copies of the 10 highlights. I'm going to count them down here in a moment. You'll see them on the screen. We'll speak to each of them. You'll then be given a copy of a piece of paper that looks like this. It'll have 10 bullet points on it. You will also then be given, as you leave, for those of you reporters that are going to be writing on this and need to get more detail, you'll be given a document that will have bullet points specific to every single plan. So if you want to know how does this specifically affect KERS non-hazard, you can see it. What about hazard? You can see it. What about legislative? You can see it. So there's a page on each of these with more detail. Again, this is not the bill in itself. The bill has lots of other extraneous things that you will also be given soon. But the bottom line is we want you to understand what's in it first. So what we're going to ask you to do when we're done, after we've gone through the top 10, that's really the crux of it, we'll arm you with that and this, and we'll make available to those of you in the media who, on background at 1 o'clock today, want to come back to this very room and go through any questions you have with our budget director, you will have that opportunity. So get with Amanda Stamper if you would be interested in participating in that. We want to make that available to you. You will find the bulk of your questions will be answered by this document. But to ensure that we address everything you want to know, you will have an opportunity to go through it at whatever length you want to go through it with our budget director and his team. With that said, there's just a couple of things that I want to reference. First of all, and I've made a list of some of them here just so I don't forget some. Probably don't even have them all on here. The conversations that we've had with Robert Stivers in the Senate, Jeff Hoover in the House, and their teams, they have each met on occasion. I have met on multiple occasions, and as have they, and as have members of our teams, with at least the following groups. The Kentucky Association of Professional Educators, the Kentucky Education Association, the Kentucky School Board Association, Kentucky's Association of School Superintendents, Kentucky Retired Teacher Association, the Jefferson County Teachers Association, Kentucky League of Cities, the Kentucky Association of Counties, County Attorneys, Kentucky Jailers, County Judges Association, Kentucky Fraternal Order of Police, Kentucky Government Retirees. That's 12, 13 different groups that we have had extensive interaction with. I would encourage you all, and for those of you that are following along that are not in the media, to understand that I would ask you to ask them this question. But I will tell you what we have heard repeatedly, and that is that there has never been an administration that has so engaged and so listened to them on this topic or perhaps any. We have had extensive conversation because we wanted their voices to be heard. We needed their voices to be heard. These groups represent hundreds of thousands of our fellow Kentuckians. And they affect ultimately, directly and indirectly, a whole lot more lives than that. So voices have been heard for months. Changes have been made for months. The bill you're about to hear about that's going to be unveiled here in a moment is a bill that keeps the promise. When we first began, and I don't think it's telling tales out of school, we were looking to try to resolve this problem more expediently than we ultimately have come up with. We've come up with a plan that will save this over the course of the next 30 years. It takes more time, but it will allow us to deliver on the promise. So the first thing that we really want to do, and if you just pull up the first bullet point here, this is just simply keeping the promise, will save Kentucky's pension systems and meet the legal and moral obligations owed to current and retired teachers and into public servants. This is everything that has come out of the three of our mouths and others that we work with from the beginning. It goes back to when I ran for office. You go back and watch any of the debates during the course of the gubernatorial race. This phrase, this comment, came from my mouth repeatedly because it's correct. We need to do what is legally and morally right. This bill that is going to be released, that will be voted on in the days ahead, does exactly that. The second point, if you could bring it up, is that this requires a full payment of the ARP. You're going to hear terms like level dollar funding. We're not going to get into all that detail today, but or at least not in this session. But I want you to understand that this creates a new funding formula that mandates hundreds of millions more into the retirement plan, making them healthier and solvent sooner. What does that mean? It means that in the past, the way the statutes were written, there were certain obligations of the House and the Senate. And despite all the rumors to the contrary, those legal obligations were met. They were. What was also in the statutes were certain language that allowed some things to may be done or may not be done. And that included things like the ARP. And so in the past, some legislative sessions and some administrations chose not to fund the ARP. It was not statutorily required. It will be going forward. And so on a going forward basis, this new language is going to mandate that we take the entire cost of obligation, we break it into tranches, and we use something, again, you'll hear it called level dollar funding, that requires us to not kick the can down the road. It requires us to fund the actual amount every single year for the next 30 years. That's how it's going to be paid for. If there's any, this provision alone should cause every legislator in both parties, Republican or Democrat alike, to vote for this bill. There's not a retiree or a person working toward retirement in Kentucky that should not be thrilled by this provision in the bill. The fact of the matter is this: we are going to deliver on the promise, and that includes funding that promise, regardless of what's happening in the environment. Those are the first two issues. The next six, the gentlemen behind me are going to take you through, and then I'll close it out with the last two. So at the end, we'll be happy to take questions, but Jeff, are you taking number three?
Great. Thank you, Governor, and thank all of you for being here today. I want to first commend the Governor for several months ago, actually going back to his campaign, of saying we must address this issue in Kentucky. It was part of his blueprint for Kentucky. It was what he ran his campaign on, and he has been dedicated and resolved for months to come up with the plan that we're presenting to you here today. Not being critical of anyone in the past, but I think everyone in this room knows that this problem has been looming for several years, and no one has had the resolve to step up and move forward like Matt Bevin has. And I appreciate his leadership. We've had several meetings over the past several months. I think both of these gentlemen would say we didn't know if we'd get to this point today or not as a result of some of those meetings. But a lot of work, a lot of time, maybe 12 to 15 meetings. The shortest meeting I can recall was four and a half hours, some of them lasting 7 and 8 hours. But we came into this with the governor, with President Stivers and the Senate, with three goals that I think we all shared. Number one, as the governor said, was to meet our legal obligations, to keep the promises that we made to our teachers, our state workers, and our retirees. Secondly, to have a solution that provided a long-term foundation financially, a strong foundation in a long-term sense for a financially solvent and sustainable system. And I think as you get into this, you will see that we have done that. And the third thing was to avoid bankruptcy, because when you look at where we are and where we've been and the trajectory that we're headed on, something had to be done to keep that from happening in Kentucky. So if you would, let's look at point number three. For those workers who are still employed, our current active state workers, as well as our teachers. There is no increase in the retirement age. I know there were a lot of rumors about that. There is no increase in the retirement age. And for every state worker and teacher, understand this. You remain in the exact system that you have today, a defined benefit plan, until you reach that 27 years or that age if you're a different tier employee. But that was important to us, to keep that promise to current workers and current teachers that you remain in the exact plan. Nothing changes for you until you reach that retirement eligibility of 27 years of service. Number four, for those who are retired or current retirees, there is no clawback provision, and I know you all recognize that PFM recommended the clawbacks. It would generate millions of dollars, but we chose not to do that. We felt we wanted to go in a different direction. So for those retirees, and I've gotten hundreds of emails from the misinformation that's out there that you're going to claw back part of my pension, that is not happening. That is not happening at all to any pension checks. And it protects health care benefits for all retirees. You will see no change in health care benefits for retirees as well. Basically, current retirees see very little, if any, change. Number five, for future non-hazardous employees and teachers, you will be required to enroll in a defined contribution or a 401k-like plan that will provide comparable benefits. So for new hires, you will be required, either at the state level, the teaching level, to enroll into that type of plan. Let me say this. This plan is long overdue, but it gives Kentuckians a strong foundation for a sustainable, solvent public pension system. We're going to do what we have to do because failing to act will result in this public pension system in Kentucky, which is already one of the worst funded public pension systems in the country, to go bankrupt. And this is simply not an option for us. How did we get here? Frankly, years of kicking the can down the road, not casting aspersions on anyone, but as I said in my opening remarks, there's just been a lack of resolve to really address this issue at every branch of government. I commend the Kentucky State Senate, who probably 8 or 9 years ago began beating the drum and sounding the alarm about the problems with our pension system. And that public service means making tough choices. It means sometimes taking tough votes, coming up with innovative solutions. And I believe that's what we're doing here today with our pension proposal. The teachers who are at retirement age, let me make one thing, something that was very important to us. We have about 14,000 teachers who are currently eligible for retirement in Kentucky. We were concerned about teachers thinking they did not want to go to a DC starting July 1 of next year. And so we have made provisions and will make provisions for those teachers that are 27 years or more. They will have a 3-year window in which they can remain in the defined benefit plan that we have now. I believe that alleviates any concern. There's no rational argument for any teacher to now say, I need to retire next July, because for 3 years, nothing is changing. And I think that is a very important point that we need to make, because there's been a lot of discussion about that at our school districts and across the state. In closing, let me just say again, I appreciate the governor's leadership. I appreciate the entire working group that's been meeting on this. Budget Director Chilton has done a phenomenal job of leading us in the discussion, as well as Chief of Staff Brickman and others that have been there. And I'm hopeful as we continue to get this out and talk to people, they will realize this really is a strong foundation to provide a sustainable, solvent public pension system in Kentucky and goes in the direction that we need to go. Thank you.
I think most people know who I am, even though I wasn't introduced. I do appreciate everyone coming out. I do. That's fine, Jeff. As the press knew the other day, he didn't like all the time y'all were spending with him, so now he's forgot me. But to that extent, I do want to say this. The speaker is correct that in the Senate we've been talking about this, and I showed a group of people articles from 10 years ago that we started raising this flag, that the pension system had an unfunded liability, and we didn't have individuals who wanted to join us in this mission of changing the system, not until now. And in this last budget cycle, record amounts of contributions were made to the pension plan because of the direction and the leadership of Governor Bevin. I don't say this without the ability to back it up. You can go back and look at every budget in the last 20 years and compare it to the budget that we're currently operating under, and it proves my statement. To that end, we took off through the period of time that Governor started his term. He requested that we sit back and do an assessment and that we fund the ability to have individuals look at all the systems, and as the speaker said, it is complex because you have multiple systems, subcategories in each system, and then subcategories to the subcategories when you're trying to do this, and then individuals who go between respective subcategories to the subcategories, and then in between the respective systems. And to that extent, it took a long time. It took a lot of in-depth reading and work to understand what we needed to do to, as the governor says, and as you see on the screen, keep the promise. I stand here with the speaker and say it is the most complex problem and the most intricate problem I've ever dealt with in 21 years. So to that extent, we also want to recognize several areas. Bullet point number 6, which I'm not sure will be brought up on the screen, we want to recognize the reality of hazardous duty employees. And to them, they will maintain the same benefits package that they currently are in. This is out of recognition of what they do. The fact that when they wake up and go on their shift, be it in the morning, the evening, or whenever, they know that they may come back injured, hurt, or potentially having an ultimate sacrifice and having lost their life. So we are not changing that part of the benefit, and it still will remain a benefit plan that it is now. Also, to that extent, there were loopholes, and many people, especially the Louisville media market, knew about the young man who got killed that didn't qualify because of a loophole. And we're going to close that loophole, that any person that is in his situation, a young officer, will qualify for death benefits if killed in the line of duty and defined as a hazardous employee.
And this will be retroactive.
And it will apply. That's true. It will apply to this young man who was the officer in Louisville. Lastly, one of the things I've heard over my 20 years is that legislators treat themselves differently, allow spiking of pensions, and a benefit level greater and more rich than anybody else. We are going to treat ourselves more harshly than any other system. We're going to reduce our benefits. We are going to be treated differently, as it would say, and I think bullet point 8, to the extent that we are not going to have the rich benefits system that we should have never had. We have complained about that for many years in the legislature, but did not have individuals who wanted to join us in this mission. And therefore, we are going to take those steps within this legislation to correct that, because it was only right to do and should have been done years ago. And so to that extent, these three areas, you will see that will come through this legislation in conjunction with what the speaker has said, and the ability to future fund the unfunded liability will make this system solvent and sustainable for all participants in the future. And to that extent, you have to appreciate the direction that the governor has helped us go in. And I want to applaud his efforts and the speaker, because without the ability for the two chambers to work together with the governor's office, this plan could have never come together. And truly, I can't say enough about their work ethic and their desire to deal with this. And with that, I think this is a very morally sound plan, a legally defensible plan, and something that the people of Kentucky will understand and accept as the direction we need to go in future years. We have devoted. One other thing I want to say about this, people will ask about, well, what have our colleagues in the other party been doing? Well, I have been briefing them as well as the speaker has on progress and ideas and encourage them to sit down at the table with us and deliver whatever they may want to deliver. That has been done with access to the PFM group, briefings on things that were going on with the work groups, and we'll continue to engage them and encourage them to participate in this system.
The last couple points I want to touch on are bullet points 9 and 10. Number 9 you can go ahead and put on up there. This is something we've talked about. There were a lot of rumors. We, the three of us, did a video to this effect, and I've said it multiple other times, and yet people never fully quite believed it. But there will be no emergency clause at all. This law will not even go into effect until July 1st of 2018. That gives everybody, what, 9 months or however many months we have between now and then, to digest this, to look at it, to understand it, to be able to have the impact of it to the extent it has any impact on them, to be understood. And that was very important. So there is no emergency clause. This is something that will allow people plenty of time to understand. The final point is number 10. These structural changes will absolutely have an impact on our credit rating. And while that is a something that's not really on the radar screen of most folks, that is huge to people in our business community. That is huge to people in our banking and lending communities. That is huge to people in our economic development community. Because we have, as a state, the Commonwealth of Kentucky has been downgraded repeatedly by different rating agencies in recent years because of this looming pension crisis. This will stop the bleeding, put forward a very definitive and clear and statutorily required solution, and it is that solution that is going to give a tremendous amount of encouragement to the credit rating agencies with respect to how they look at Kentucky. We right now are one of the worst credit-rated states in America. The fact that that will start to improve means a couple of things. Our limits on ability to borrow, if we were to need to as a state, would go up. Our cost of borrowing would go down. These are things that are good for Kentucky to the extent we would need them. And so these are the kind of things that, frankly, are going to be a ripple effect. I want to touch on a couple things, then we'll answer questions that you have about these top 10 points. This is going to be a model for this nation. And I say that definitively because this is a $4 to $5 trillion problem in America. If you use actuarially correct numbers, this is a $4 to $5 trillion problem in America. And some may beg to differ and say it's only a $2 or $3 trillion problem or a $1 or $2 trillion problem or the same kind of things that have been said about this state. But the reality is it is a problem bigger than anybody has the dollars to pay for unless we make similar structural changes. I do applaud these guys. We have had marathon sessions, and there were at times where I think we always believed we were going to come out of the tunnel. We just didn't know how many of us were going to be battered up in the process. But I'm proud of them. I'm honored to have worked with them. We have delivered the promise. This is the thing I want to make clear. We have delivered on the promise. A lot of questions will be asked about what about the inviolable contract. Every single thing you will see in this bill is within keeping of the contracts that have been made. It fulfills the promise that has been made. People who are on track, we had the opportunity, and you'll go into this in more detail later. But when there was a question, for example, about should we grandfather in this group, we first thought about maybe it should be just the people within 5 years of retirement. And then we thought, well, what about the person who's 5 years and 1 month? So what if we do 6 years? Well, then 6 years, right? So where do you draw it? And then we said, you know what? We're going to just simply say every single person who has come into the system with an understanding that they could go to 27 years and retire under the following circumstances is going to be given that circumstance, period. And as was noted by these gentlemen, not changing anything for someone who's already retired. They don't have the option of going back and doing a redo. So nothing is changing for retirees, nothing. They're going to get everything they're getting now. And for people that are in hazard duty, they're going to continue on in a defined benefit plan. They're going to have the option
of going into a defined contribution plan. And when you see the details on this, many of you in this room yourselves are in defined contribution plans, or you have members of your family who are. And you understand that these are ones that provide a certain amount of flexibility, portability, and frankly, employer matching. When you see the generosity of the employer match that the Commonwealth of Kentucky is going to put into people's retirement plans, you will be, I would encourage you to compare it to the one you have wherever you work. You will find that it will be a very, very good plan. And so we're going to give people, both new employees and those that have been here a long time. New employees will go into it. But those that are 1, 2, 3, 5, 10 years in, they're going to have the option, if they want to take the lump sum of what they've accrued thus far in their benefit plan, move it into a DC plan. And as a guy who spent his entire life working in this world, which is why it has been a passion of mine, which is why I understood the danger of this, and which is why I'm grateful for their willingness to work as hard as we have to resolve this. As a guy who's worked in that world, I would take in a heartbeat the DC plan that we're going to be rolling out over the alternative. I really would. It's a better plan. It's a richer plan in terms of what it will do for an individual at the end of a working career. But that will be for people to decide. This is a good plan. It meets every contractual obligation. It has heard the voices of every one of those groups that we mentioned earlier. They have been heard. The wonderful thing about this plan, and with this I'll close, we'll take questions you may have, is when you have a plan that fulfills every promise, that delivers on everything that is contractually required, that addresses every single person and takes into consideration both what is legally and morally appropriate, and that even when it's done, everybody is slightly unhappy with, you know you have the right plan. And we have the right plan. If we had something that one group was completely satisfied with, then we would know that we squeezed the balloon in the wrong place. And there are many, many parts to this. The bottom line is this. It's going to come at a cost to the taxpayers for the years to come, but we are going to manage that cost. We are going to actually mandate that we meet this. This will be funded. The last thing I will say is this. There will be a question about the new actuarial changes and how that affects some of the county budgets and the school board budgets. That has not been lost on this legislature. Having two guys who've been here for 21 years each is a powerful asset to the people of Kentucky. To have a speaker who's been here for 2 decades, to have a Senate president who's been here for 2 decades, they've been to this rodeo, they are in the communities, they understand the cost of this. While we're not going to go into all the details now, we are, over the next 4 years, going to feather in the cost of implementing this plan. So this is a 33 or 4-year solution, is essentially what it is. Every single consideration has been taken into consideration, and we have come up with a morally, legally, ethically, and every other standpoint appropriate plan to make this happen.